Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. It's a big job, protecting the country we love, given all the enemies that we have, foreign and domestic. Fortunately, we are aided in doing so by a man with considerable experience on, well, both fronts, I think it's fair to say, a former Army officer turned undercover CIA agent, a man who ran for Congress, has written numerous books, including The Decline and Fall of the CIA, entitled Beyond Repair. His name is Sam Faddis. These days, he is a prodigiously productive contributor to the public policy debate through a Substack column that he writes for andmagazine.com. I encourage you to follow it. He's convalescing, I'm sorry to say, happily on the mend, I'm glad to say, but still a little bit under the weather from a bout of the flu. We're delighted to have him with us, especially for a somewhat extended conversation, which is a special treat and privilege given the circumstances. Sam Faddis, welcome back to Securing America. It's always great to have you with us, sir. Glad you're feeling a bit better.
Great to be here, Frank. I am feeling better. I still sound a little bit like a frog, but hopefully I'm intelligible.
You are intelligible for sure. Sam, you've been writing, despite this malady, about a couple of things that are really important that I wanted to tease out with you. One is, you've been reflecting on what we've been learning from Twitter. Now under new management, under Elon Musk, he is disclosing through some Twitter accounts information about what he found in the files of the operation that bespeaks a degree of collusion between Twitter and not just other mainstream and other social media platforms, but also with the FBI, the Democratic Party, the Biden campaign in 2020. Give us your thoughts on what we've learned to date and what it tells us about, well, not just Twitter, but sort of the state of our polity.
Well, what we've learned to date is that it is at least as bad as we all suspected, maybe even much worse, right? Using the Hunter Biden laptop story, which is the sort of the cutting edge of what's broken so far, as an example, no question that the FBI was colluding with big tech to suppress the story and prevent the American people from gaining access to critical information, clearly to protect the Bidens, and obviously to influence a presidential election. So, I mean, it's hard to know where to begin with all the problems with that. I mean, first of all, it's very clear law that the government can't censor things outside of very narrow windows. And also very clear law that they can't make an end run around that by just working through private actors. So the illegality
is fundamentally a First Amendment constitutional right we have that they're not allowed to infringe, right?
They are not, and they're not allowed to play a game where they just get somebody else to censor you, which is exactly what this is. This is illegal, clearly illegal, has been established as illegal for a long time. So right there, we have a massive issue. We have the fact that they are doing this, the FBI, on behalf of a political party. So they are violating constitutional rights and engaging in illegal activity, and in the process, interfering in a presidential election. Once again, we're up to our necks in illegality and immorality and everything else.
This was done, let's be clear, at least in part, during another president's tenure in office. The man that they were working to undermine was the man who was at least supposed to be their superior in the chain of command in the executive branch, namely Donald Trump. We've learned in a second dump, Sam, about the extent to which lots of people were censored through a variety of techniques, I guess, shadow banning prominent among them. But, you know, preventing tweets from being amplified or otherwise promoted, designed to suppress. And it seems pretty clear, disproportionately, people of a sort of conservative stripe, shall we say, the left not so much. Again, evidence of an abuse of the, well, Section 230, you know, latitude that these outfits have on the grounds that they're providing sort of a public space for the free exchange of ideas, no?
Well, right. So there's the other side of the coin. We were talking about the Bureau. We have these entities like Twitter, Facebook, etc. Then they were given certain, as you say, latitude legally, or and really what amounts to immunity from being sued by people, because expressly they represented they were not editors. These are the legal distinctions that are critical. They were providing what amounted to, you know, an open space, an open forum, the sort of town green where people could all speak and, hey, look, I'm not responsible for the content. I just give people a place to speak. Well, you know, that ship sailed a long time ago. They're not just editing, they're engaging in censorship. And so why are they now, why aren't they allowed to be sued for libel and slander? I mean, all of this, the whole roof should come crashing down on this, and these guys should be ruined financially, quite honestly. So that's yet another piece. And of course, we haven't gotten to what to me is the most critical element, which is, okay, the FBI is in interfering and they're suppressing information. What was the actual, the heart of the information they were suppressing? And it wasn't really coke use or hookers. It was corruption. And beyond that, I, the center of gravity for me is massive amounts of contact and money connected to Chinese intelligence and the top levels of the Chinese Communist Party, all going straight to Joe Biden. So here's a guy who's maybe about to sit down in the Oval Office, ultimately was. Everything says this guy may very well be owned by our number one enemy on the planet. And our top counterintelligence agency steps in. I'm trying to resist the urge to laugh, not because it's funny, because it's just so mind-boggling. The guys who are the number one domestic counterintelligence agency for the U.S. government don't jump all over that and say, good Lord, this could be the biggest CIA scandal in American history. They say, oh, we can't let anybody know about this. Nobody should have any inkling that Joe may be a Chinese spy.
Yeah, before the election, that is, especially. And Sam, just a quick point. You said the money was going from what were known to be top Chinese intelligence officers and others directly tied to the leadership of the CCP to Joe Biden. The line is, well, no, it actually wasn't going directly to him, and we're still not really sure if he's the big guy and whether he got 10% or whether he got 20%. That it all went through his son and other, you know, conduits, family members and the like. Your professional judgment is the one that matters to me most. And we have to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to get it on the probability that Joe Biden was directly, personally, and massively compromised by our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. We'll be right back with more with Sam Faddis right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Chinese leaders profess that nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. powerful Committee on the Present Danger China webinar yesterday made clear, however, that the CCP actually believes it can fight and win a nuclear conflict, and is preparing to do so. This conclusion was reinforced by recent official reports to Congress about developments in China's nuclear arsenal. One that is likely an underestimate says the PRC is tripling its size. Another classified document reportedly assesses China now deploys more long-range land-based missile warheads than we do. We have no counterparts to the CCP's vast tunnels for protecting and hiding its missiles, submarines, and bombers, and for moving and sheltering leadership and civilian populations. Ditto, its hypersonic weapons designed for preemptive strikes. Clearly, we must urgently upgrade our nuclear deterrent and augment it with effective missile defenses. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. We are talking to the slightly froggy Sam Faddis, but as he promised, what he's saying is not only intelligible, it is very powerful indeed. We're delighted that he's recovering from the flu. Sam, Joe Biden has been, I think it's fair to say, the target of influence operations. The Biden family, crime family, as it's been called, as documented by Hunter's laptop, makes it clear that lots of people were trying to take advantage of the door being opened for such influence peddling by Hunter, including senior echelons of the Chinese Communist Party and its intelligence services. So I put the question to you before the break, and I'm repeating it now. Are you persuaded, on the basis not least of your own background in clandestine intelligence operations, where you did this sort of thing for a living, that Joe Biden not only was the object of this influence, this elite capture operation, but was actually successfully targeted by our enemy?
Yes, without question. And I really think that the evidence is overwhelming. To be honest with you, if I was still serving and we were sitting in a room at some senior level having a discussion of a case like this, and somebody started trying to construct some fantasy series of explanations for how this is not what it obviously is, I think the room would dissolve into laughter. I think all the senior intelligence personnel in the room who actually involved in the business of counterintelligence and espionage would be like, oh, for the love of God, can we? I mean, if you took this case, changed the name Biden to some West African name and the location to a random West African country, or really any other country on Earth, I select Africa because Chinese are particularly active there. And it's just presented these facts to the intelligence community and said, what's your evaluation of what's going on here? In about 5 seconds, they would say, well, the Chinese have bought themselves a president. That's what's going on here. We've seen this happen over and over and over all around the planet. It's a very straightforward playbook. It's very clear. There's no ambiguity. For some, well, we know, no, I was going to say for some mysterious reason, it's not mysterious, for political reasons, we are all supposed to just pretend like we can't see the obvious. Hunter is a man without skills. Hunter is a guy who got thrown out of the Navy because he was a cokehead. Nobody hands Hunter any money for his charming personality. Right? He only has one attribute, which is access to dad. Now, the Chinese communists are a lot of things. They are not fools. and they are not easily parted from their money. Maybe they might hand Hunter a few million one time, speculatively, to find out, can you deliver on what you're promising us, buddy? But if Hunter didn't pony up, which means Joe didn't deliver, there would not be money coming after that. Money came again and again. And last point I want to make right here, we know conclusively that Xi Jinping himself was aware of these contacts and sanctioned these contacts. These were not rogue actors. This is the top level of the Chinese Communist Party.
And clearly he was the beneficiary of what flowed from all of this. Sam, I want to drill down on this in one specific way, because in previous conversations we've had, I believe on this show, but certainly on our webinars, our Committee on the Present Danger China webinars, to which you've contributed many times, and I'm very grateful for that as well. You can find all of those, by the way, folks, at presentdangerchina.org, and I strongly commend that series of webinars about both the unrestricted warfare the Chinese Communist Party has been waging against us for decades and the help they've been getting from Americans in waging that warfare. A prime example of which is Joe Biden. The point that you've made, Sam, as an intelligence professional, is there's a distinction between having approached, having even recruited a targeted individual as part of an influence operation or, well, outright espionage, and controlling them. Using that distinction, would you conclude, based on what we know, that Joe Biden was not only targeted, was not only approached, was not only presumably the beneficiary of at least some of this largesse from the Chinese Communist Party, laundered through his son, laundered perhaps through his brother or others, but that he is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party as well?
Yes, that is my professional opinion. He was targeted and he is controlled. Now, 2 points. One is, I mean, the average layperson doesn't think in these terms, and there's no reason they should, but this is the objective of all human intelligence operations. It's not about maybe I'll blackmail this dude later, which quite frankly is rarely done, not a particularly effective method and so forth. It's not about maybe he'll do me a favor later. That's not an intel operation. That's what State Department does. Give somebody a grant and hope that they steer in our direction. No, this is about a guy gets money and whatever else he gets, and he dances to the tune that is played. How that actually works face to face, that depends on the personalities involved, but it doesn't change the fact that the asset, who in this case would be Joe Biden, ultimately does what he is told to do on behalf of the people who have purchased him. Now, that is how espionage works. Maybe that's not the way it's portrayed in the movies, but that is what espionage is all about. CIA, if your asset doesn't satisfy the criteria for being controlled, he is not an asset. He is not recognized as an asset. So,
and could in fact prove to be a liability to you in the end, no?
No professional serious intelligence organization wants to maintain contact with an asset who will not accept being controlled, because he may be a liability, because you don't know which direction he's going. You don't really know what side he's playing for.
So let me ask you, Sam, if I can, because it's really vital that we get this clear. Joe Biden has now, in the course of his 2 years in office, repeatedly had direct contacts with Xi Jinping, now the emperor of China. Some of them are 2 hours long. Some of them are 3 hours long. I think the personal best record was something like 4 hours long. Anybody who's been watching this president, even superficially, knows He has the attention span of a gnat at the moment. So when you talk about this kind of protracted engagement with a foreign leader, even if you're taking time away for simultaneous translation, something is going on in the course of that time. And I just would ask again, your professional judgment, is it likely that Xi Jinping is using those events to tell Joe Biden what he wants him to do, what he expects him to do, what he will do?
It's entirely possible. We should also note that the president makes a routine of disappearing from the White House to his Delaware home, where he is magically free of all the logs that keep track of who goes in and out of the White House and all sorts of other restrictions. Now, I suspect a big chunk of that explanation for that is because that's where he gets juiced up by doctors offset just to remain standing.
But Sam, hold the thought. We got to pause. I don't want to lose that thought. We'll be right back with more with Sam Faddis right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are continuing what is an extraordinarily important and chilling conversation with a highly accomplished professional in the intelligence business by the name of Charles Sam Faddis. I'm very proud to say he is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, an invaluable resource for this program, but also one of the clearest and most articulate national security professionals I've had the privilege of knowing in 40-odd years in the business. And Sam, you've just laid out an indictment of Joe Biden and his not just compromise, which is a term I've used a lot, but his control by the Chinese Communist Party's intelligence services and ultimately the people they work for, Xi Jinping and company. So you were just finishing a thought about how the Biden administration has operated that could very easily be obscuring the full extent to which this kind of control is taking place, whether it's in these recorded, yes, but not publicly available hours and hours and hours of conversation with Xi Jinping, or perhaps surreptitious contacts in Delaware or elsewhere. But, finish that thought, if you would.
Well, I mean, the man disappears offset, if you will, to his Delaware home with regularity. He doesn't stay in the White House and he doesn't go to Camp David. He does not go to places that fall under certain controls They are not access is not regulated by statute, and certain protocols are not triggered. Meaning, most notably, logs of who comes in and out of these locations are not kept. So now, part of that is, I would think, very clearly, because this is where they pump Joe in his Delaware home full of whatever keeps this guy who's long since lost his marbles upright at all. But it certainly provides a window for all sorts of other things for folks to come in and out. And, you know, his instructions do not have to come directly from Xi Jinping. That's not how they need to be communicated. But I guess at this point, what I would just remind listeners is access to all the information we're talking about in terms of Hunter Biden's laptop has been in the possession of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for 3 years now, long before the election. The only thing that we know that they have attempted to do for sure is stop the American people from knowing anything about it. Now, even if you want to make
and prosecuting people who had brought it to the public attention.
Right. Exactly. So they've done their best to crush anybody who wants to pursue this. Now, even if you want to say, okay, Sam, look, I get your assessment, I respect your assessment, whatever, but I disagree. How could any reasonable intelligence or counterintelligence professional look at this information, not recognize immediately the screaming threat and possibility that the Chinese communists are about to install a guy in the highest office of the land? And we got to know one way or the other for sure, folks, which side is he playing for? So the one thing you could not possibly justify would be throwing this in a drawer and forgetting about it. You got to run this to ground. You have to know what the answer is.
And Sam, again, I just want to emphasize something that you said earlier that is implicit in what you've just said. The people who threw it in the drawer are those charged with counterintelligence on behalf of our country. This is not just, you know, Joe Biden's, you know, functionaries on the campaign trail or in the White House, for the matter.
Right.
These are the people who are the front line of defense against penetration and suborning and elite capture and everything else, including of the most sensitive kind, which this clearly is, the commander-in-chief of the United States, for heaven's sakes. So, Sam, I got to just tell you, this is not news exactly, but between the Twitter story that contributed to the suppression of the kind of information, you're absolutely right. We had a right to know. And we've heard through polling that had we known, I think it's something like 16% of the Democrats who said they voted for Joe Biden said they would not have voted for him.
Yep.
Had they known he was compromised, had they certainly known that he was controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. This is a travesty of the highest order, as well as a bona fide national security threat. And we so appreciate your clarity on that point. Listen, Sam, I've got about six other things that I'm anxious to talk with you about, and I don't want to cut this short, but I want to talk about one in particular, because among other things you did during your distinguished career in the Central Intelligence Agency, at the end, you were responsible for protecting our country against biological warfare attack in the form of terrorism. And that informs a lot of your understanding of what has been going on in terms of the virus that came out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. You contributed importantly to a product we call the CCP is at War with America, our Team B3, and people can get that for free as well at ccpatwar.com. And Sam, we made it very clear not only that we had been subjected to a biological warfare attack because they deliberately sent the virus once it was out of the lab somehow here, but also that the guy who 20 years ago was the defense minister of China said in a close private meeting with senior party cadre, that China had been directed to prepare its biological warfare program, which is, by the way, illegal, folks, for the purposes of depopulating the United States. To the extent that that's what we're dealing with, is not only a hostile power, a power that you know, has a very different agenda than ours, wants to dominate the world and so on, but also sees as a necessary precondition to doing so being our destruction. This, presumably, is operating today. And we did a very important webinar yesterday on their nuclear threat. And I said on our mutual friend Steve Bannon's program last night that the good news is I don't think they want to use all of these nuclear weapons that they're building. They want them to obviously checkmate us. But if they want to colonize this country after they've depopulated it, the way to do that is not to irradiate the place, but rather to use biological warfare. Your thoughts on all of this, if you would, Sam, and where we are on the BW threat specifically.
Well, I mean, I would add this. We suffered the attack. We failed catastrophically to deal with the attack. This has all already happened. It's not speculative. It happened. We failed catastrophically at every juncture for a whole variety of reasons. So that's
not
all.
Not least because we adopted, at the instigation of the Chinese Communist Party and their proxies at the World Health Organization and a guy that they had co-opted, compromised, controlled, if you will, Tony Fauci, the China model for how to respond to a pandemic.
We took our entire pandemic response plan, crafted over many years by very learned people like our good friend Dr. Hatfield. We threw it out the window. We adopted Chinese communist measures. We failed catastrophically. So they have seen, the Chinese communists have seen, for sure, this works. These guys don't have their act together. And now, amazingly enough, we are changing direction on nothing. We are fixing nothing. We just lost a battle, if you will, and showed the enemy every weakness we have, and that all of this...
It took a million casualties in the process, by the way.
All of that. And now we are sitting here doubling down at every juncture. We haven't done anything to close any loopholes. It's as if the enemy just poured through holes in the wire everywhere. And then we get up the next day and act like it didn't happen. And the next attack could be, God knows what, and infinitely worse. And yet we are not even lifting a finger to fix any of these issues.
Well, and I guess to put a fine point on it, Sam, what I think I hear you saying is that what they're doing actually is putting us in a position where we will respond to the next disaster, the next perhaps vastly more murderous attack, with the same proven, totally useless and indeed counterproductive responses. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Look, how hard is it to predict what happens next? If you watch a football game and you've just run the same play three times and the other guys aren't doing anything to stop you, well, you're probably going to run the same play again, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. This is a lot more serious than an NFL game.
And again, if the point is that in part what makes it really bad is our response to it.
Yes.
And our play is we're going to respond by using your techniques, shown not to work, shown to be counterproductive, shown to be murderous, in fact. It's an actual invitation to you running those plays against us one more time and possibly far more deadly in fashion. Sam Faddis, what an extraordinary conversation. Thank you for rising to it. I hope you continue to feel better and that you'll come back to us again very soon in perfect voice and health. In the meantime, stay well, my friend. Next up, we're going to speak with Chuck DeVore of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Stay tuned for that. Straight ahead. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the content of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at the American Family Network, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. We're back. We're joined by a friend and colleague, a very distinguished public servant in the past, now with a very important think tank in Austin, Texas. His name is Chuck DeVore. He has served with distinction in the United States Army, rising to the rank of lieutenant colonel with a background in the infantry, I believe, and certainly in intelligence. He has served in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, where we first crossed paths during the Reagan administration. He has been a legislator in the California Assembly and is now the Vice President for National Initiatives at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Among other distinctions, he has just written and published an important new novel. It is entitled Crisis of the House Never United, a novel of early America. Chuck, welcome back to Securing America. Congratulations on the new book. I look forward to a proper hour-long visit with you about it and its thesis and its important insights. And we'll do that on another occasion. But I have, in the meantime, a couple of other things I wanted to talk to you about. Sure. First of all, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Energy is on my mind, as I know it generally is on yours, for a couple of reasons. You've been overseeing an important national initiative at the Texas Public Policy Foundation for some years now on energy, trying to find ways to have affordable and reliable sources of energy, which, of course, has been a bit of a problem in your now native state of Texas because of the overinvestment, it seems, in solar and wind that gave rise to so-called Snowmageddon back in February of 2021. Tell us a little bit about your project. I know you had an important meeting that touched on these issues just yesterday, I think, and gotten a little press from the New York Times on the subject as well. So yeah, walk us through some of these developments.
As we say, you don't get flack unless you're over the target. So
that's right.
Yeah, we have this life-powered initiative that we've had now for a number of years to promote affordable and reliable hydrocarbon energy. And the challenge, of course, is, you know, Frank,
hydrocarbons. Oh no, this is the word that must not be said.
Exactly.
You're favoring it.
Yeah, well,
good for you.
Here's the challenge, right? It's not necessarily that we're favoring it. It's the federal government through its subsidies and mandates is overwhelmingly putting its finger on the scale for wind and solar. And the problem is, you know, with wind and solar is they're not on all the time. And the grid has to be on all the time, which was the topic last night of a meeting that we had at the foundation where we screened the film Grid Down, Power Up. We had your Tommy Waller there with us in a panel that included State Senator Bob Hall and Brent Bennett, who's a PhD physicist who works for us. He's actually a battery scientist, so he knows quite a bit about that. And last night's conversation, Frank.
And the producer of the film, David Tice, well, I think, was with you as well.
The producer was in the audience. He was making sure that we were all well-behaved. I did introduce him. I was the moderator last night. And so we learned, and by the way, it's all, of course, was live streamed and it was archived for those that want to come to the texaspolicy.com site to take a look at that. But we learned last night about the four ways that the grid can be threatened, apart from, of course, an overabundance of wind and solar that can destabilize the grid. And that was physical attacks on things like transformers and substations, cyber attacks on that infrastructure, a human electromagnetic pulse attack, whether a nation state actor or terrorist. And lastly, our nearest solar neighbor, the sun, with things like mass coronal ejections that create solar or geomagnetic storms that could also damage the electrical infrastructure. And of course, the challenge, Frank, is that we're an electrified society, and without electricity, you don't have water, and without water, you die within just a few days. So it's a pretty serious topic from the standpoint of civil defense and doing the right thing. Lastly, Frank, we learned from the film that there's a community, I believe it was in South Carolina, up in the northwestern portion of the state, where they hardened a portion of the grid for critical infrastructure at the cost of about $115 per capita, which if you amortize that out, kind of how you'd look at the building of a dam or a public school or something, would probably come to about $2 per person over about a 50-year period of time. So fairly reasonable and prudent investment, Frank.
Well, actually, we could say, I think safely, we can't afford not to make that investment. And you know, one of the things that is, of course, particularly timely about this presentation and the film itself, of which I'm a huge supporter of in a little bit, but it's just a terrific program.
I noticed you were in it, by the way.
Yeah, just a cameo appearance, I think it's fair to say. But nonetheless, it notwithstanding that, really, it really tells the story, not only about that Lake Wylie effort in South Carolina, but also what's happening in San Antonio, in your own state, to try to create kind of a model for getting a city, which happens to have a lot of military installations right in it, by the way, as you know, protected on a resilient grid. But we also had to the first of those lines of attack, as you know, and you mentioned last night, as I understand it, Chuck, an actual physical attack on not one, but two transformer substations in North Carolina.
Right.
Just in the past week. Talk a little bit about, you know, the conversation as it should be framed in the light of, you know, tens of thousands of Americans being without power. And it's not just that you don't get water, you don't get anything, basically, right, without electricity, of course.
Well, as your colleague Tommy Waller talked about during our presentation last night, when we were talking not only about the North Carolina attack, but the pretty substantial attack on a major substation in the Bay Area back in 2014, as I recall, 2013-14, and how, as Tommy puts it, you know, you go through these neighborhoods next to freeways, for example, and you'll see sound walls to protect residential areas from the sound of that nearby high-speed road. And yet, there's a break in the wall, and there you have a substation with just at most a chain link fence. And so the suggestion was, gee, you know, maybe it'd be good to have a cinder block wall around it, so these things are more resilient from a direct attack from a high powered rifle. Of course, we live in the day and age of drones, so that's another way that you get around a wall. But, you know, walls aren't that expensive. And it certainly would be a prudent thing to do, because
losing the grid is very expensive. Excuse me, exactly. Chuck, we just have to take a short pause. We'll be right back with more with Chuck DeVore at the Texas Public Policy Foundation right after this. We're back. We are talking with the vice president of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, where he specializes in national initiatives. His name is Chuck DeVore, former congressman, assemblyman in his original native state of California, now very active in Texas, including on trying to protect the grid in that state and across the country. And Chuck, you were just saying that what we've learned from this episode in North Carolina, or should have, is that even the relatively prosaic way of just shooting up transformer substations can have a very, very deleterious effect, let alone, you know, other forms of attack, cyber and electromagnetic right. pulse and the like. So I wanted to give you a chance before we run out of time altogether to talk about another aspect of your energy focus at TPPF. And that is something that got the New York Times attention and criticism this week. What are you up to in terms of, besides making the grid more resilient, I hope, getting us onto a more affordable and resilient, reliable energy
status? Right. So we were on the front page of the New York Times because my colleague, Jason Isaac, a former Texas State House member, whom I have the honor of working with on this project, has been leading this great effort to go out and try to raise the energy IQ of Americans. The challenge, Frank, as you know, is when you poll people about green energy, they're all for it until you ask the question, well, would you be for it if it cost your electricity another, let's say, $20 a month? And then you start to see support begin to erode very rapidly. And of course, as we saw with the Winter Storm Uri in Texas almost 2 years ago, there's a problem when you allow an overinvestment of wind and solar on your grid, and it discourages the construction of new, reliable, and affordable power plants that run, in this case, on natural gas. We've also had a problem in Texas of the early retirement of coal-fired power plants, because the way Texas operates its grid, we are more free market-oriented than other states, less regulatory oversight. And because of the generous federal subsidies, Frank, what you're seeing is investors are responding to that, and they're building a lot of wind and a lot of solar. People used to think that Texas would have problems during the summer. As you may know, Texas has its own independent grid that covers about 90% of the state. The problem, though, is not now the summer. Solar power, you know, performs fairly reliably during the summer. It pretty much puts out what you expect it to. Wind, of course, is all over the map all the time. But during the winter, we find that solar power, of course, doesn't provide very much, even in sunny southern Texas. And wind is even less reliable. And so as a result, when you have these winter storms, in the case of Uri, it was about a 100-year event, we had a case for a few hours, Frank, where wind and solar together were producing less than 0.3% of their rated capacity. That's 0.3%. And the problem is, of course, you get people like the New York Times and these environmental activists that say, well, you know, the thermal power, you know, traditional coal and nuclear and natural gas lost about 40% of its capacity because it wasn't properly winterized, or there was other things, you know, errors or things breaking because of the historically extreme cold. Okay, fine. Lost 40%. That compares to losing 99.7% of the wind and solar. So you tell me what's more reliable.
Right. And that baseload power particularly is so vital, because when the wind isn't blowing and when the sun isn't shining or there's snow on top of those solar panels or right. what have you, you need those other things to be performing. Listen, we could talk more about this, and we will, I know, in the future. But I appreciate what you've done. I think I've actually received Jason's briefing at a meeting not so long ago and was very impressed. How can people find it online? Is it available there?
Yeah. So if you just go to texaspolicy.com, look for Life Powered, you should find all kinds of good stuff. We're pretty active on social media as well, both Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So we do everything we can to get the word out.
Good. Well, including getting a front page story from the New York Times, even if it's critical, as they say, as long as they spell your names.
Right? They did. That's the they important did indeed. Thing. And there was a wonderful photograph of my colleague as well.
Terrific. Life Powered is the brand. Chuck, speaking of brand, let's turn quickly and only superficially, alas, yes. to your new book entitled Crisis of the House Never United. Yep. Give us just the elevator pitch on why people ought to get it and where they can.
Frank, thank you very much. I wrote the book for two reasons. First of all, 18 years ago, I went through the Claremont Institute's Lincoln Fellowship. It's an eight-day program to learn about the origins of the Constitution and the philosophy of the founding of the nation. And what I found, Frank, was that the ratification of the Constitution was very tight. It almost didn't happen. And so what I wanted to do back then, and life got busy, I got elected to the legislature, I wanted to write an alternative history novel about what happened in those early years of America when the ratification failed and you didn't have the carefully considered checks and balances of the Constitution, and you had these powerful populist waves that were pushing for more of a mass democracy. And so my book explores that history. What you find in the book is when George Washington dies in 1999, the glue that held the Articles of Confederation together just kind of breaks apart and the country flies apart. And very quickly, you've got foreign intrigue, you got the French, you got the English, you have the North, the South, the Northeast, all kind of vying with each other. Things get ugly pretty fast. And I think that there are lessons today for people who would promote a national divorce, which is kind of why I think this book is timely today.
Well, I think it sounds fascinating. I haven't had a chance to look at it myself, but I look forward to doing so and to having you on for an hour, if we can, in the very near future, Chuck DeVore, to explore, a marvelous prism through which to look at what actually did happen, what it has bequeathed to us, thank God, for having happened, namely this Constitution and the Republic built upon it, and what could happen yet to us if we fall prey to the same kind of centripetal forces, I think one might call them, that you chronicle in your alternative history. Thank you for this creative effort, and thank you for all the work that you do at the Texas Public Policy Foundation and have been doing for our country throughout your lifetime. Godspeed, my friend. We'll talk with you again
soon.
Thank
you.
We'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Until then, I hope that you have found this edition of Securing America helpful and that you will help us do just that. Until then, go forth and multiply.